Morning. All right. Sorry about that. Good morning. This is Mike.
And I'm Emma.
And yeah, you're listening to Headlines and Deadlines on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. We're working with some technical difficulties here today. We've got only one mic working, and computer's not working, so you're not going to hear any of the sweet tunes we got for you. We just have some random CDs lined up. And what do we got here first, Emma?
We have a song from the Caraways, who are a four-piece group out of Toronto. Some of their members are the Weaker Thans and All Systems Go. So this is a song from their album, Fever.
Alright, that was the Caraways special and random treat for you. Hope you enjoyed it. But yeah, on to eye-opener news. Emma, did you do a story this week?
I did. Focusing in on the World University Service of Canada referendum that was conducted at Ryerson last week. the referendum was held to see whether or not students supported a $4 student levy that would be added on to their tuition fees. You probably heard about it. If not, the referendum passed by 210 votes, with 10% of the student population voting. The story that I focused on, Carl Polina, who spearheaded the No campaign, encouraging students to vote no for the student levy, says that he's planning to launch an appeal to the Ryerson Board of Governors to challenge the results. He claims that the Yes campaign broke campaign rules, that they spent more than their $500 limit, they used their own committee funds, and that they bribed students with Timbits. He's also claiming that Yes members, or WUS committee members, tore down his posters. So some pretty big claims there. Catherine Redmond from the Board of Governors has said that there is no cap on the amount of money a referendum group can spend, and members of the WUS group have said that they haven't broken any rules. Interesting whether he actually decides to launch the appeal. The appeal process is 10 days, and then you find out whether or not the appeal's been approved. He also takes issue with the fact that Gerard Biamungu, who was the first student to be sponsored by the program, put forward the proposal to the Board of Governors and, in his words, is benefiting from it, will be getting some of the money. Gerard Biamungu says that he doesn't think he'll be receiving the money, although he doesn't know how the funds will be allocated. He thinks it's going to future student refugees, as he's now self-sufficient and works two jobs. So, kind of interesting, really contentious issue on campus that's raised. Been a big topic of discussion around whether students should be forced to donate the $4. What do you think about that, Mike?
I think it's pretty ridiculous on the part of the No campaign. I guess I take issues with multiple aspects of what is the student's name who's spearheading the No campaign?
Carl Polina.
Yeah, first of all, in terms of his claims about the Yes side, you know, using their own campaign funds and spending more than the limit. I mean, he's making all these claims, but, you know, where's his evidence? You know, is he just making these to try to prove his point? And second of all, the issue is it's only $4 per student. Where was he when, the vote was taken for Maple Leaf Gardens and it was near $200 per student for that program? So it's $4 per student to support a refugee claimant. I mean, I'll throw in, $20. I'll pay for, his side if he doesn't want to pay, ante up $4. So that's what I think about it. How about you?
I think the $4 isn't going to set me back very much. The interesting issue that many students take with it, talking to Paulina about this, he's saying that he supports the program, and that if it weren't for the involuntary student donation, he would donate to the program himself. And had a few other suggestions for how the money could be raised. Said that the RSU and WUSC could split the funds 50-50, for example. He even suggested that the new RSU VP of Equity position that was created, $30,000 position, be used to go support refugees. So he had some other suggestions, but I do think that it wouldn't set students back very much, and it is a good cause to support. And it didn't seem to me that there were any rules broken in the conduction of either campaign, so I feel confident with the results of the vote. And maybe the close vote, as well as the low student turnout, could be attributed to the fact that students didn't know about it. Quite a few of them didn't. Talked to a few students. One of them said she lived under a rock and she didn't know what I was talking about. So it's always difficult getting, creating awareness among students about what's going on. But are there any other stories that you've got for us this week?
Yeah, in the continuation of the Wellesley Street fire situation, there's one Ryerson student who may be out of a home until Christmas. I mean, she's staying at an apartment on, I believe, Church on Gold Street. But, yeah, more than 7 weeks after the apartment fire, she still hasn't been able to return home. She's hoping to return home in December, but it's not, doesn't look very likely. The Community Housing Association has just begun repairing and reconstruction of the apartments as they had to leave them for multiple weeks before they dried. She was in the north tower, the fire was in the south tower, and she was also on the 7th floor, where the 17th floor. So she wasn't directly by the fire, but I mean, I guess still from sprinkler systems and other smoke damage, her apartment suffered. So yeah, she lost all her belongings. They're only able to recover her laptop, so pretty desperate right now. Yeah, she's one of about 600 other people who are still without a home, so hopefully the situation can be resolved soon. I don't know, what do you think?
I wonder if there's any way that the Ryerson community can support her. Maybe they wouldn't be too receptive to a student levy at this point, but a fundraiser maybe? Hopefully students find out about this and can find some way to support her in any way they can. So yeah, it's a really awful situation for her to be in, especially as a student. So if there's any way that we can find to make it easier for her, that would be great. Or, you know, I think she's living with a friend right now, is she not? So she has a place to live, but not very settled. So yeah, I think that the Ryerson community should pitch in and support her somehow. I've got another story for you this week. Yesterday, there was a woman struck by a car on campus. One of the students who was at the scene who called 911 said that she saw the woman's body flying, and the officer claims that it was a green light, so the driver wasn't at fault for the woman being hit, and she only had superficial cuts and was just taken to the hospital to get checked out. She was unidentified because she didn't have her wallet or her ID on her, but the officer at the scene said that she was homeless and she was a crack addict. But the driver in the story felt awful that he'd hit her, even though it wasn't his fault, and she just darted out in front of traffic. So created kind of a big scene on campus yesterday, I think. But I guess it's always an issue when, like, part of Gould Street's closed off, but not everybody's aware of, you know, it's not a complete closure because it's just that one section of it between Young and Church. So people not necessarily paying attention to the fact there's cars there. Yeah, there's always a fraught relationship, I think, in downtown between people and cars. I know I'm not always the best for, you know, crossing at the crosswalk.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's also odd because it's, I guess, driver, pedestrian, some sort of awareness week, and that they're handing out tickets for people who jaywalk or go through red lights with a bike or cars. So it's an awareness week for fatalities because of that. And the reason I know that is because yesterday I was biking home and rolled through a red light on my bicycle and got a $325 ticket. So, and I asked the officer if they're, you know, they give warnings or anything like that, and he told Awareness Week, and because of the casualties of the past year, where there's bikers or pedestrians being hit by cars, they're handing out tickets. So, yeah, hopefully that lady's all right, and hopefully, you know, watch out there for you know, getting a ticket. I mean, you shouldn't be going through red light anyways, but you know, just be careful out there. But yeah, I think we're gonna go to another song here. What do we got lined up on this random mix of CDs? Hopefully something good. I know I had songs lined up and pretty disappointed again.
No, me too. I was pretty psyched for
But you'll have to do. What's the name of this band we got here? Some called the
This is Kino Pravda from their album Departures, and this is Tired Old.
Thank you. awesome set of tunes. The feature in the eye opener today is titled Let's Get Physical, and it's a set of facts about young adult bodies, I guess because as university students, you know, kind of health isn't always a priority, and their bodies can go, you know, undergo some harsh treatment. So there's like something like 32 or 26 facts here. So let's see, just kind of rattle some off for you right here. Young people can develop middle age related conditions like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and memory loss from chronic sleep loss. So I don't know about you, but I sleep pretty good and pretty long, so I'm at risk of that. But let's see what else. Here's an interesting one. On average, young adults produce between 1 and 3 pints of saliva each day.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you're in a conversation with somebody and you know, you give them a little spray, you know, don't worry. Without the saliva, you can't taste food, so, you know, it's just a side effect. What else we got here? Oh, this is an interesting one. In Canada, women are twice as likely to develop depression as men, which I didn't know.
Okay.
That's interesting and surprising.
I believe it, actually.
Yeah, I, you know, I am not a woman, so I can't attest to that, but, you know, I'm sure it's the case. this is a weird one. The risk of cardiovascular disease is twice as high in women who snore than women who do not. So if you're a woman who snores out there, I don't know, watch out. Let's see. I don't know, this one's kind of weird. Your femur bone is stronger than concrete. I don't know what that has to do. Only maybe if you're, you know, partying hard and you fall over and you kind of fall on your femur. Maybe, you know, it's good to know that it's stronger than concrete, so...
I think it would mention something that's really fragile to make sure to protect it. But I know people that have broken their femur, and it makes me wonder now how they actually did that, if it's stronger than concrete. What kind of shenanigans were they getting up to?
Yeah, definitely. Here's one that's definitely, I'm sure, a cause or good information for many students out there. Binge drinking as a young adult can lead to long-term memory loss. Alcohol consumption affects the hippocampus, the part of your brain responsible for learning and memory. So binge drinking limits the activity of that area of your brain, which hinders our ability to retain new information. So definitely those multiple drinking nights on the weekend will definitely counteract that cramming for the exam on the Sunday night.
That's true. One of the other facts in the story, talking about how our brains are most active at night, so cramming actually may be the best method to study for your exams. I believe that binge drinking, you know, eventually leads to long-term memory loss. It definitely leads to short-term memory loss. So maybe all those nights you don't remember anything start to things. Interesting story, one of my classmates did, talking about how smoking actually can increase your risk of Alzheimer's. I guess another, you know, way that smoking can negatively affect you later in life. But yeah, really interesting set of little known facts about us. And I know I don't necessarily, I try to get sleep as well as possible. I don't always eat very well though. So make sure to listen to your body. And was that book by that really famous doctor a few years ago, like When the Body Says No? I don't remember who it was.
No, I'm not sure. So, but yeah, who knows? When the body says no, you know, sometimes you gotta say yes. But
it's true. It's true. Sometimes there's concerns that are more important than that. But it's how psychological issues can sometimes be linked to physical issues. So that's pretty interesting. Another story for you. The Ryerson Students Union AGM is coming up, and some of the issues on the table are having a sexual assault support line. This comes in the wake of an alleged sexual assault in Pittman Hall about 2 months ago. So that's one motion that's been tabled, as well as keeping Gould Street closed past September 2011. as well as having a committee for student space. So how to increase student space on campus, how to manage it. The RSU has also tabled a motion wanting to change referendum voting from an online system to a paper ballot. They said there were too many technical difficulties with the last referendum. The author of the story made an interesting comment that the RSU has not mentioned whether technical difficulties led to a low turnout in the last referendum. So maybe more students voted than we know. So the RSU AGM is coming up. So it's open to all students to come by. So if you want to know what issues are being discussed on Ryerson campus, it's on Wednesday. It's today. So this evening, you can drop by. It's in the sort of main gym on the main floor of the Student Center.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're thinking of switching back to paper ballots. It almost seems like a transgression in terms of voter practice or getting votes, because it seems like it would be easier for students to vote online, as oftentimes, I mean, students are on Blackboard a lot, and, you know, so you think it would be easier for them to just click and vote as opposed to, you know, taking the time to fill out a ballot. Because I know, personally, last year I didn't vote, even though there are constantly people on campus asking, you know, come over here, you know, get up to vote, and I tell them, no, I already voted, because I didn't, you know, I was usually pretty busy on campus and had things to do, going from classes to classes, whereas at home, on the internet, well, the voting being online, you know, you're sitting there, and you maybe have a bit of free time, you can vote, so it's interesting they didn't outline what those technical difficulties meant, and it'd also be interesting to see whether or not voter turnout was higher with online voting than paper ballots. And you think if it was higher with in-person or paper ballots, they would, you know, come out and say that as an issue to switch back, but they haven't said that, so it's interesting. And another story today coming out, Ryerson was one of 20 universities looking to become greener and more sustainable. The Council of Ontario has released their annual Going Greener report. The report looks at sustainability initiatives and what Ontario universities are doing to improve these. So, the data is used to examine whether universities are trying to become greener, creating more sustainable spaces, and also encouraging ethical purchasing habits. I know on campus there's a push for the use of refillable water bottle refillable fountains, so you can put your water bottle in easier as opposed to buying water bottles. I know that is one of the initiatives. Emma, do you know of any other initiatives that are going on?
Just was super skilled and like whacked my knee against the control board table. I know that the roof of the engineering building is completely green, so that that has solar panels in it, and that's one source of green energy for the campus. I know that they're trying to increase their I know in residence last year, the Turtle Island Recycling Company is what takes care of all our recycling in residence, and that's a local company, so most of that stays within Toronto, but they very stringently manage that recycling. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Students, you know, will drunkenly throw anything in the recycling, but there's people who physically sort through it to make sure everything's recyclable, so they're being really conscious about you know, what's being reused, and so that's reassuring to know. I know that on my floor in residence last year, the recycling bin would be like piled up to the ceiling. So would the garbage bin, but with stuff that definitely couldn't be recycled. So they seem to be fairly conscious about that. Do you know of any other green initiatives on campus?
I'm not sure. Yeah, besides the green, like it's a 10,000 foot feet of green roofs. That's pretty cool. And the water bottle plant. Yes, Ryerson's food has also been shifting towards sustainability. The university has improved the type of oil used in cooking, biodegradable containers. So there's definitely a shift there. So that's interesting. But yeah, we're gonna go to another random song break here by a band called, who knows, De Novo Doll. I don't know.
This
I'm not very excited.
De Novo Doll. And
maybe I'll be surprised.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. They look like winners. This is Dance Like David Basin from their album Shout.
Track. Hopefully it'll woke you up because it kind of hurt my ears. But What do we have coming up? Or what's happening in Toronto news?
Not so much a Toronto news story, but of interest to, I guess, parents and anybody who texts. There's a study come out of Atlanta saying that excessive texting is linked to risky behavior. There was a study conducted among 20 public high schools in the Cleveland area, and saying that teens who text more than 120 times a day are 3.5 times more likely to binge drink, to get into fights, to do drugs, to have sex, and saying that 1 in 5 of the teens studied were hypertexters and 1 in 9 were hypernetworkers. So that means spending 3 to 5 hours a day on Facebook, Twitter, other social networking sites. Study also said that many teens were susceptible to peer pressure and have permissive or absent parents. So this was more to do with young people among the ages of 8 to 18, so not so relevant to university students. But I think the etiquette of texting and, you know, they were saying that drunk texting was also pretty big, and I know that's something that everybody has probably experienced at one point or another. I have a friend that sends you a completely incomprehensible text message. Another story on the iOpener website talking about text etiquette and how it's important not to drunk text your friends or, you know, or when you're in a public situation, have your phone out in public view, I guess, as texting becomes more of a prominent method of communicating. The meaning of the messages becomes more important as well. So I guess that's like anything, as the method becomes more accepted. I know that I often send texts instead of do anything else. It's the easy way to communicate with people, and you know you're not disrupting them. But yeah, interesting study for sure. I wonder whether this is a bit of a scare tactic. The way the article is structured would be kind of alarming to any parent. And it was on parentcentral.ca. So whether or not there's actually a risk associated with hypertexting or not, that remains to be seen. And they weren't saying that this meant that any teen who was a hypertexter, you know, was more likely to engage in risky behavior, just that it was there was a link seen. So kind of interesting. Do you have another story for us, Mike?
Yeah, I was just going to comment on that last one in terms of the hypertexting. It seems a bit kind of like a fear-mongering story. You know, just what, you know, parents need another story for them to read about, you know, read the headline, hypertexting leads to this and this and this, and, you know. But as the story states in the eye-opener story, you talked about, you know, as texting becomes more common, I mean, it is common, but as it becomes, I guess, more important tool in terms of the messages, you know, texting should be supported, and I don't know, I kind of take issue with it, but I mean, I don't know a lot on the topic, so you never know. It's interesting, did they have, like, the stats of from the survey about, you know, how it was conducted or anything like that?
They only said that they studied 20 high schools in Cleveland. There wasn't that much information about how the study was carried out, but only that it was young people between the ages of 8 and 18. So mostly focused on the results of the study as opposed to actually how it was conducted. So I tend to agree with you that it sounds like kind of a fear-mongering story. I wonder whether the authors of the study tend to text, but they definitely didn't have that method of communication when they were teens. So, yeah, it's a whole different ball game, I think, for, you know, I wasn't a young person 40 years ago, but I think the climate is very different now as it was, you know, when they were growing up. So just learning to adapt to new technology, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Another story here, not Toronto, but Hamilton, but definitely affects the, you know, issues in Canada and the Ontario economy. U.S. Steel Canada employees have been locked out of their company in the Hamilton plant, ending near 20 years of labor peace at the former Stelco plant. Just after 7 p.m. on Sunday, the company locked the gates at the, I guess it's Burlington Street facility, withdrawing the jobs of 900 workers. Basically, U.S. Steel is demanding the existing benefit pension plan to be closed to new employees. They'll be placed instead in a new retirement savings plan. But the union has rejected these demands, calling the plan a plan to shaft current retirees and future employees. But as often with unions, not all union members support the bargaining team. So many want the chance to vote on the company's latest offer, but currently the union is not accepting the offer, but doesn't want to vote on the offer. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes. A similar deal was accepted at the union at a Lake Erie Works after 8 months of strike, which ended in April. So some union members urged that the deal should be taken up now, just because a similar deal was accepted by a similar plant. But for now, however long the lockout lasts, the workers will be getting $200 a week. So that's the story there from the Star. So it's interesting. I know it was covered by CBC and all the other multiple papers. So interesting to see how long that goes and how things work out.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully some deal is worked out that ends up supporting the workers. Another story, probably one that you've heard about, is the mission in Afghanistan is pretty high profile. Prime Minister Stephen Harper and his conservative government are considering keeping non-combat troops in Afghanistan until 2014. So this is past the July 2011 withdrawal deadline. And right now there's 3,000 military personnel in the southern province of Kandahar. And while these troops would be withdrawn, Harper is considering, and the conservative government is under pressure to leave behind some military trainers to address the shortfalls of the NATO mission. Minister of Defense Peter MacKay has assured the media that this would be behind the wire outside of Kandahar, so they would be, they wouldn't be out on the front lines. They would still be present there, but wouldn't be in combat. But I think the idea of there being troops has raised, has been, you know, the subject of some controversy, regardless of them being official troops. Still a Canadian presence there. There's quite a few people who are family friends or people that I know that have spent time in Afghanistan in various roles, and it's always interesting when people come back, the kind of effects that they have as a result of you know, not even if they haven't engaged in direct combat, being in the military and the stress of that, and the fear of there constantly being confrontation. So, you know, another story published talking about how Ottawa is hiding the injuries that veterans suffer when they come back from overseas, the amount of money that some of these veterans need to cure some of their ailments, psychological and physical, as a result of what they've suffered. So whether or not Veteran Services actually spends enough money to support these people is, you know, always a question, and what kind of services will Canada provide for these 3,000 troops when they come back next summer. So definitely interesting.
Yeah, definitely, and ties into the issue, both the returning veterans, especially that issue ties into Remembrance Day, which is coming up tomorrow. But we're just going to go to a song break here, and we'll come back and we'll talk about a little bit about Remembrance Day. We got another band here. What's this random band of Bandwiga. Omega Tea Time, I believe it is. So.
Sounds like a bit of a party.
Yeah. Okay. So it's another surprise for you. Who knows? We don't know what we're getting into. Could be exciting. Could put you to sleep. But, which track we got here? I believe.
This is End is Beginning from Omega Tea Time by the Jerry Alvarez Odyssey.
The Jerry Alvarez Odyssey. Jerry Alvarez Odyssey.
It's apparently a Gruesome's Guitarist solo CD. This is End is Beginning from their album Omega Tea Time.
Yeah, so that was interesting. But as a tie into her last story, and as an event or day tomorrow, Remembrance Day, a very important day. Remembrance Day is celebrated both Britain and Canada, I believe it's called Veterans Day in the United States. But yeah, I know in Toronto at Old City Hall, both at Old City Hall and at the provincial legislature, there are services ongoing. And as there is across the country in almost all the communities. And it's definitely really important to get, if you can't make it to a service, take that moment of silence. There is an interesting story from Britain. The fashion store Hollister had denied its employees from wearing poppies, and received a lot of flack or outcry from the public, and eventually reversed the decision and is allowing its employees wear poppies. I believe only on Remembrance Day, though. So that was an interesting story. Especially, you know, when at a time when, you know, there's no more World War One veterans left in Canada. And these anniversaries are the date, like the time, what am I trying to say here? World War One and World War Two are, you know, farther and farther behind us, and it's important to remember them, and, you know, there shouldn't be any more obstacles in the way of remembering these events, especially as there shouldn't be any obstacles in the way of remembering veterans and casualties from Afghanistan and UN missions. So I definitely don't think there's enough done in whether it's elementary school or high school to educate kids or students on these issues, because I know just from my experience, much of what I learned was through my own, was through family members or friends, mostly family members, and research on my own, reading on my own. I mean, there's Remembrance Day events in elementary school, I believe, but yeah, I think there definitely could be more done. I know, what do you think?
I definitely think it's really important, and something that I learned, my mom told me this last year, actually. Ontario does actually not, like, Remembrance Day is not a stat holiday in Ontario, and it's the only province in Canada that it isn't. So while it's definitely still observed, and, you know, it's, there's going to be several services in Toronto and throughout Ontario, I'm sure, and people will be observing, it's still not a stat holiday, so makes me question the importance of it to the provincial government, and maybe why. And Ontario is the most populous province in Canada, and the has the most number of veterans by default. So, interested why that's not observed, why people aren't given that day off. If you work tomorrow, then you have to find some way to get an hour or so off, or just take a moment of silence, I guess, at 11 a.m. But yeah. Also important, I think, to remember the veterans of the UN missions as well, the First and Second Gulf Wars, the Gulf War that was in 1990-1991 in the Persian Gulf. There was a small contingent of Canadian troops sent over with American troops as well. My dad was in that contingent, so interesting to know about that sort of little-known mission. And while there weren't too many casualties, it's definitely still a contentious situation about the effects that the soldiers had when they came home. So if you can, even if you have class tomorrow at 11, if you can take a minute or two to observe or make it down to Old City Hall or the or Queen's Park for service tomorrow, or just wear a poppy, sort of do whatever you can, I guess. So, but I think Remembrance Day is always a bit of a hot topic because of the glorification of war that, you know, some think is promoted by it, as opposed to, you know, continually to strive for peace. But I like to look at it in the light of, you know, the sacrifices that the people who fought in these wars made for the independence and for democracy and to continue to strive for peace. So some, you know, rhetoric there, but I think it's pretty suitable to the situation. So, yeah. All right. We are going to pull up a song for you.
Yeah, another surprise. But I know I'm going down to Old City Hall tomorrow too. And then remember state ceremonies. I was hoping to get to Ottawa to stay with a friend and observe the ceremonies there, but I'm not going to make it. But what do we have here?
This is Puru Verano from his album Time to Grow. And this song is Blue Sky, White Sand. I do.
Yeah, as we're coming to a close here, there's some events coming up in and around Ryerson. Obviously, the RSU semi-annual general meeting. That's today at 5:30. Tomorrow there's obviously Remembrance Day, which we were talking about. There's also the Urban Hip Hop Union open mic, so it's the Ram and the Riot 9 p.m. So that could be interesting. If you want to check that out, I'm a fan of hip hop. Saturday, Laugh Out Loud, the FCAD improv event. It's at Heel Slip House. And also a pretty cool event here on Sunday evening, 8 p.m. at Yuck Yucks, Mature Student Association of Ryerson Comedy Night. Let's see what else. And Monday, November 15th, Campaign for Women's Empowerment. They're meeting in Pittman Hall Cafeteria. So there's a good list of events. And definitely get out tomorrow if you can. Get down to a Remembrance Day ceremony. I mean, if you have class, you know, it's fine to skip it. I'll support you. But up next is AM FM. I'm Mike.
And I'm Emma, and you've been listening to Headlines and Deadlines on CKLN 88.1 FM. Hope you have an awesome rest of the day.